I would like to acknowledge the Guringai people and pay my respects to the elders both past and present. The Guringai people are the traditional owners of this land where we meet today. Encounters between humans and whales, especially those involving a whale breaching underwater craft or surfboard, are extremely rare. And the chance of surviving such an event would depend on many factors, including the size of the species, the angle and the force of the breach, and the response by the person, you, Jason.
Welcome to Sharing Stories, Changing Lives. The host, Karen Sander, has the privilege of interviewing individuals from all walks of life, each with their own powerful and inspiring stories. The guests share their life experiences, and in doing so, they celebrate the transformative magic of storytelling. To learn more, visit www.thestoryroom.au and explore the private membership area, the Backstage Pass.
Welcome, Jason, and thanks for coming on to Sharing Stories Changing Lives and sharing your incredible story.
Thanks for having me on, Karen.
So the first thing I want to say is congratulations on actually surviving this, a whale breaching. Oh, my God, it must have been just such a mind-blowing moment.
Yeah, I mean, the chances of it happening have to be multi-million to one. Also, the chance of having it filmed, you know, because if we didn't have it filmed, it's a story. And I think the having it filmed from two different angles, again, you know, a guy on a headland filming it as well, and then having a GoPro on, you know, attached to my pocket is just bizarre. But, yeah, I don't think many people can say they've been hit by a breaching humpback whale. But luckily, I was lucky enough to survive the incident and also lucky for me that it was actually caught on film so people would believe it.
A million to one. I reckon the odds are even higher. Did you buy a lottery ticket?
Yeah, look, people ask. The events that led up to the actual circumstance happening with the humpback whale were just, you know, it could have gone either way. You know, an extra 3 seconds later or earlier or, you know, 2 inches to the left or to the right. But it's just fate. We can't, you know, play with those things. It just happened. But it's lucky that it's a good story and it's got a good ending. So, yeah, I'm lucky to be here talking to you and lucky to have survived.
I'd love you to tell us, what is wing foiling? Is it difficult to learn? And where were you actually wing foiling?
Yeah, so foiling itself really started buzzing about 3 or 4 years ago. And the easiest way to explain foiling in the water is if you have an aeroplane and the aeroplane is on the tarmac, it's got no lift. But as soon as an aeroplane gets enough speed, it has enough wind over the wings, it gets lift, and that's how an aeroplane flies. An aeroplane can't fly at 1 mile an hour. It needs a certain amount of speed to give it that lift with its wings. So if you can transfer that theory to water, a foil is exactly the same. So a foil, if you put a foil onto a surfboard and you stand on it in the water, it won't do anything. But if you add speed to the surfboard or craft that the foil's attached, the foil will want to rise up out of the water just like an aeroplane wing in the air. And then foils can be attached to either surfboards, wingboards, supboards, and they have different forms of propulsion. So one is wind. So you use a sail like a windsurfer, and that's wing foiling, and you're using the wind to propel you forward to get speed. The other one is just normal surf foiling, and when you're doing that, you're using the wave to propel you forward. So you're using the energy of the wave, once you paddle on it, to give you speed, which will then make the foil want to lift in the water. And that's the sport of foiling in the water, surf foiling, yeah.
When you started foiling,
yep.
Did you have a background in windsurfing or something or surfing?
Yeah, I've surfed all my life. So I've lived on the northern beaches. I lived on Warriewood Beach, grew up on Warriewood Beach. So I've lived on the northern beaches all my life and started surfing when I was about 5 or 6 and then was involved in nippers and surf clubs and everything else and then moved away for a little bit of time, about 10 years, and then was lucky enough to come back to Newport Beach. We've been in Newport Beach now for about 17, 18 years, and I love it here. We're very lucky, and, yeah, the northern beaches of Sydney, Australia are just beautiful, and it's a lucky place to live.
Knowing the northern beach as well, I have to agree. I've lived here since I was 17. So learning to foil, yep. Was that difficult?
Oh, like anything, Karen, it's like if you wanted to try and play golf tomorrow. If you've never played golf, it's not going to be easy. If you would like to try surfing tomorrow and you've never surfed, it's not going to be easy. But it's like anything, if you put the time and effort into it, you'll be good at anything. There used to be this theory that no matter what your skill set was when you were born, but if you put the time and effort into it, you'll become good at whatever you'd like to focus on. Mm. And foiling, like anything, isn't easy to learn, but if you put the time and effort in, you'll get it, because that's why it's so popular and that's why a lot of people do it. It is very addictive. Like, foiling is very addictive. So for surfers who have surfed their whole life, they may get to a certain level and then that's it. So they'll get as good as they can get. Unfortunately, you know, they're not going to be a Mick Fanning or a Joel Parkinson or a Stephanie Gilmore. They're just an average surfer. So what foiling does is brings you back to the beginning and gives you that real froth and energy to learn something new. So you can take foiling up, you know, at any age, and it sort of takes you back to the beginning of surfing. And that's when surfing at the beginning is when it's got its real energy and its real vibrance. So foiling has been really good for a lot of surfers. It's just given them that second life in surfing. So the answer to your question, it's not hard, it's not easy, but if you put the time in, I'm sure you'll get it. Anyone could get it.
I think what you just said is exactly what my partner has found. He's gone from windsurfing to foiling because he needed a challenge and he loves it. He's addicted. He's out there 3-4 times a week and he's always watching the wind. The reason I wanted to ask these questions is so people get an understanding of what you are actually doing.
Sure.
I'm trying to paint a picture before we go into the real thing that happened out there that day. Can you tell us how far offshore you were? You're in the ocean off Mona Vale Beach. How far were you foiling offshore?
Yeah, so not very far. So I was actually wing foiling on the morning of the whale event. And wing foiling is standing on a surfboard with a foil underneath it. And to propel you forward, you're holding a wing. And a wing above your head is like, it's almost like a windsurfing sail. And you're using that with the wind to propel you forward. So I was actually wing foiling off Mona Vale Beach and not very far out. You know, I was probably only 300 metres off the beach. We could see breaching whales. We've had a really big whale season this year. And they go up north to the warm water where they calve, and then they feed the calves up to get big enough, and then they come back down south past us, you know, down to the cold water again. And we've had a lot of whales this year, but normally when you see a whale out to sea, it's normally just the back of it, or you'll see a blowhole, you know, it blow the water in the air. You do see the odd breaching whale, and that's very nice, but usually they're maybe 1 to 2 kilometres out to sea. It's very rare that they come in that close. Yeah, I was at Mona Vale Beach and I wasn't far off the shore, maybe 300 metres.
When it actually broke,
yep.
Just lead us through. You were just having a nice day, foiling along and...
Yeah, look, it's an unusual event because it started in the morning that I went out and I actually had a new bit of kit. So I actually had a new wing foil, which is the bit you're holding with your hands that catches the wind. And that was brand new and it had been sent to me to test. And so I had that out and I left the beach with a couple of mates and we were out catching some waves. And I caught 2 waves coming back in and I thought, you know what, it's pretty good. I might go and get my GoPro. So I left my stuff on the beach, ran up to my van, grabbed my GoPro, clipped it onto my shorts, turned it on, but it literally wasn't facing anywhere, shooting anything, and then left the beach again. And then that's when the incident happened. I went out probably 300 metres, turned around to come back in to catch a wave, and just to my right-hand side, I could see this massive object coming straight up out of the water. And I knew it was a whale straight away. Something in your brain doesn't trigger shark or turtle. It's just too big a mass. And as it came up, and then it actually broke the surface of the water, so it stuck its nose and head out, that's when I started to, you know, go, this is not going to end well. And then what happened, the whole body literally comes out. And when a humpback whale breaches, it comes out and lands on its top side. So any whale breaching videos you'll see, a whale comes up out of the water, rolls, and then lands tummy side up and top side down. I don't know why they do it, but that's just what they do. So what happened when it broke the water, came all the way up above my head, and I was probably looking up 30 feet above me, and I had 20 to 30 ton of whale above my head. Then I saw it start to twist, and then it literally could not have hit me any better if it had tried. It literally T-boned my face, my left side, yeah, and then dragged me underwater.
Look, honestly, what did you I can't even get the question out here. Do you recall what your actual thoughts were?
No, because your thought process, you have to go to the shops today, and anyone who's listening wants to go to the shops, then you know the experience of going to the shops because you've got to get in the car, go there, pick out your groceries, and then come home. And unfortunately, this was just something that my brain could not comprehend. So the whole time the event happened, did I think this is a whale on top? No, I didn't. I saw it. Your brain can't comprehend it. And even when I was underwater, my brain still couldn't comprehend what was happening. I did know it was a whale, and it did trigger that's a whale. And I wasn't scared of being bitten or eaten or anything like that. The worst part of it was the actual mass of the whale. So I predict even a calf at that size is 20 to 30 ton, and they grow to, you know, 60, 70 ton. And that amount of weight hitting you, you just have no rebound. You have no force within the human body to do anything about that. It'd be like, it's a horrible scenario, but it'd be like being hit by a car or a truck. You know, if a truck is coming down the road and unfortunately hits a pedestrian, there's no way they can put their hand out and stop the truck. It's just coming. It's just a mass. And that's kind of what it felt like to me. It was, I knew it was a whale. I knew it was big. I knew I was in trouble. And when it hit me, it was like, you know, throwing a pebble and it just rebounding off water. It probably, you know, didn't even feel me. It probably felt I was like maybe a bit of seaweed or driftwood. But, pretty well much winded me and, when the impact happened, for sure.
I'm just jumping forward to the next day. Were you sore?
Yeah, so my left side felt like I'd been dead-armed or had a tetanus shot, you know, that muscle sore feeling. Nothing broken.
Yeah.
It was fine. But I did, my left side, I couldn't really work it out. It didn't happen until about 2 days later, but I couldn't really raise my arm above my head, but it was just muscle sore. You know, wow. I was very lucky, and I was also lucky that it didn't have barnacles on it, because I would have been ripped to pieces.
And you also had a wetsuit on.
Well, I only had board shorts and a sun top on. So, I didn't even have a wetsuit on.
I thought you were in a wedding.
So I was pretty well open if it had barnacles, I would have been ripped apart. And because I can remember my face being against it the whole time underwater, and it was smooth. It wasn't barnacly. So, definitely a terrifying experience to that point.
Well, the scary part, and I'm continuing on to now, you were hit by the whale, but then keep going.
Yeah, then what happened, when we wing foil, our wing that we hold to propel us forward with the wind, that is attached to us, because if we let that go and it was a windy day, it'd just fly down the coast. And it's attached to us with about a 6-foot leg rope, just like you use on a surfboard. And when the whale hit me and rebounded off my body, it landed basically between my wing and my body. So the leg rope was wrapped underneath the whale. And when humpbacks breach out of the water, they don't breach, splash, and float like you are in a bathtub. They unfortunately breach and then they go deep, so they dive deep. And when it dove deep, I was unfortunately just a passenger. It dragged me under. So my leash was wrapped under the whale as it was diving under. And I was held down for, I think, about 14 to 15 seconds. So it's a 14 to 15 second breath hold once you've been winded by a whale. And to put it into surfing terms, Kai Lenny, who's a big wave surfer in Hawaii, world famous, he did a hold down recording of a wave he caught last week at Piahi Jaws. And it was a 100-foot wave, biggest wave, one of the biggest waves ever surfed. And his hold down was 14 seconds. So my hold down was equivalent to his, and that was the scariest part. Underwater, yeah, that's when I thought I was going to die.
Well, thankfully, Jason, you didn't. I can't even imagine the thoughts that would be going through my head if it was me. It's probably, well, how am I going to survive this in some it's a fight, isn't it? It's your own battle to survive.
It is. And you don't think about it. So people have asked, what do you think about? You don't. So the whole time did I think, undo my cuff, you know, pull a penknife out of my sock and cut it, do something, you know, Bear Grylls, try and survive? You don't. It's happening so quick. And I was against the whale the whole time, so its body was rubbing against mine the whole time. You don't think. All you're thinking about is breathing. So as humans, we need air to breathe. And underwater, we can't breathe. And they use breath hold as, it's a horrible, horrible thing, but they use it as torture. You know, they used to use it in wars and that. They put a bag over their head or they waterboard people, and that's for breath because we need air to survive. Mm. And the worst part about being underwater held down by something is breath. You'll panic straight away. And I was probably only 2 seconds away from taking a breath. And the first breath you take, you'll die because you'll just swallow salt water and you'll drown. Mm. So I was probably 2 seconds away, very, very lucky, when I felt my leg rope snap, which allowed me to get back to the surface. Yeah, so I was very lucky that it snapped. If it didn't snap, I wouldn't be here. So very lucky that it actually broke and it ripped the webbing of the leg rope, which is equivalent to ripping, you know, maybe Hessian that's 4 millimetres thick. And it had a breaking strain, the Hessian of maybe, you know, 10 to 20 tonnes. So it could pull a car quite easily. So it's an absolute miracle that it ripped.
You don't want your leg rope to break normally, but in those circumstances, thank God it broke.
Yeah, 100%. Otherwise, I wouldn't be.
If you're interested in getting more involved in our community, connecting with people who share your interests, you can do this by visiting our website at www.thestoryroom.au.
There's so many things that actually happened that particular day. You had a GoPro, so you had, and you'd gone into the beach to get the GoPro. So you captured some footage on your GoPro. But there was a guy on the headland who had a camera. Give us that story.
Yeah, so what happened? I after the whale, then I came to the surface and made my way to the beach. And I got to the beach and there was a couple of people and they were calling emergency services. And I said, look, I'm okay. I'm all right. It's fine. You know, I really just want to get in my car and go home. And I got to my van and I told my mates and they didn't believe me. And then I got in my van and headed home. And I was sitting at home in shock and I was literally shaking. And my phone started pinging. And I thought, oh, that's odd. It's vibrating, going off. Anyway, I started looking and there was like 15 messages. And what had happened, there was a guy called Paul Nettlebeck, a Monavale resident, and Paul had walked out with his morning coffee out of Hillcrest Road at Monavale up to the headland and he was just had his phone and he saw me whizzing along and he thought, oh, that's a nice picture, I'll just take that. And he was just filming me going along And then right at the end of his 20-second clip, that's when the whale breached and landed completely on top of me. And he literally stopped filming to ring 000. So he stopped filming, rang 000 and said, you know, I think I've just witnessed a death. But he posted that on Facebook. And my friend saw it on Facebook and said, oh, I think that's Jace. And so that got back to him. And then one of my friends gave him my phone number and he was nice enough to call to make sure I was okay. But that was the first instance of anyone seeing anything about the clip. I hadn't even looked at my GoPro footage at this stage because I wasn't worried about it. It was just the guy on the headlands footage, which was pretty explanatory and incredible in its own right, you know, because you see the whale breach and then completely just squash me. So, yeah, that was the first instance of any footage of the event being shown.
It's almost 1,000 to 1, it's 1,000,000 to 1 to actually get that on footage. That's the, like...
Yeah, for everything to line up, this story really was a multi-million, billion chance to one. Because when I'd gone back to my van, if I took an extra 2 seconds or 5 seconds and had a drink, it's not going to happen. The whale's going to breach somewhere else. Well, it would probably breach in the same spot, but I would be there. You know, the guy on the headland wouldn't have caught it because it wouldn't have happened. And it's just for things to line up. But also to have footage of it was amazing because then once I opened my GoPro, I went, wow, that's pretty incredible. But I didn't have time to look at it because what had happened, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 10, Channel 2, all our TV stations here in Sydney, Australia, and, you know, they all wanted it on the news. So they all wanted to meet me at Monavale Headland. So I went up there at about 3 o'clock and Paul Nettlebeck had arranged the whole thing. It was very nice because I really didn't want to do it myself and I really wasn't that interested. But when I got there, I'm glad I did it because there were about 20 film crew and they were all really nice. They were doing their live crosses and preparing it for the nightly news. And it certainly was an event after that. That was the start of the, you know, social media train that comes after when something goes viral. But that was the start of it. So, yeah, they're very exciting times, but, yeah, different for myself for sure.
Well, you aren't a big social media fan yourself, are you? You don't have a very big profile.
Oh, I'm on Instagram and I've always liked Instagram and I have a bit of following on Instagram. I have about 10,000. But Facebook, no, I don't do Facebook or TikTok or any of those. I just do Instagram and it's really just for foiling and for my sport. But not a big social media thing like, you know, like some people live on it. Yeah, for me, I was just lucky. And I was just happy to come out of it with my life. I wasn't chasing anything else. So to come out of it with my life, and I was still in shock at the time, I was just happy. So anything that happened after that, I was happy with. And what happens when a video like this goes viral, so it hits the news and then it starts getting picked up, you know, around Australia and radio and TV, and then once the rest of the world wakes up, so you've got Europe and Asia and everywhere else. Once they wake up when we're asleep, then they want a piece of it. And I had two choices. You can either sign a contract and get money. So I got offered maybe 3 or 4 contracts the first night. And you can sign that exclusivity contract and then that means that they'll sell the footage and you get a certain percentage. Or you can just let it go for free. And my choice was to let it go for free, so I didn't make a cent out of it. It's not a money thing for me. I was happy to come out of it with my life. I was happy to share and tell a story. So money was never a thing. And would it have been nice? Yeah, it would have been great to have the money, but it would have soured the story a little bit. So I chose to let it go for free. And that also helped it go viral. That means, you know, everyone can watch it, share it, spread the word, yeah, which I was happy to do.
And good on you. I think that's a really great choice to make. I want to go back to the shock. Do you mind if we talk about the shock after? You go home, which wasn't far from Monavale Beach, a few kilometres, and you sit down in your lounge room or whatever. What was the shock like?
I've never been in shock, so I've never had it before. But from when I got out of the water, I was shaking. So I was just trembling and not in a good mindset. So you're a bit skittish. So I drove home, you're right, probably took about 4 minutes to get home, left my stuff in the van, just came upstairs and tried to grab a, you know, a drink of water and something to eat and sat on the lounge. Because what had happened, I told my friends when I left and they've called BS. They've just gone, yeah, whatever, you know, like it's probably come close to him or something, but, you know, and that's fine. And then I got home and I was in shock. I was just shaking. So, yeah, that's what shock felt like. It's just you're not thinking clearly, shaking, and I was in disbelief at what had happened because my brain was still trying to comprehend it. Because when you go for a surf or a swim, no one predicts this. No one ever says, oh, gee, I better be careful today because I could get hit by a breaching humpback whale and dragged underwater. Like, it's just not in your mindset. So the shock was definitely real. But then it was overtaken by adrenaline. So because of the media avalanche that was about to happen, you don't have time. So then it's like you've got to turn your shock into energy and exuberance and, yeah, and be ready for cameras and everything else. So shock pretty quickly turned to adrenaline, and then that got me through the next 3 days.
What a story, Jason. I'm sitting here just shaking my head going, what the?
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it? It's very surreal when it happens, like watching the news at night, you know, flicking between 7, 9 and 10 and seeing yourself on the news, it's quite odd. And then I was lucky enough the next morning to do Sunrise and the Today Show and then all the commercial radio stations. And, you know, I was happy to share the story for the interviewers and the reporters from the TV stations. They were absolutely lovely. Also for them, I felt it's a good thing. You know, these guys turn up to car crashes, you know, maybe shark attacks, you know, burnt down houses. It's horrible. And to have this feel-good story, the guy and the girls who did it, they were fantastic. And it was really nice to see them excited but also happy about it. It was unbelievable, but we had footage to back it up. Yeah, and it was nice that it was a feel-good story. But it also doesn't give you time to process it because the next 3 nights I didn't sleep. Like, you know, 10 o'clock at night it started to about 6 in the morning. So I think I did Paris, you know, a podcast in Paris that night for an hour and a half and then Spain and then once the Asian countries got it, Japan and China and, believe it or not, the Ukraine, Russia, like it's they're fighting a war, but they wanted to hear from the whale guy. It was So I did about 50 to 60 interviews in the first sort of 2 weeks.
Well, you go wing foiling and come back and do 50 to 60 interviews. That's hilarious, really, isn't it? That your day could turn from this to that.
It's odd, but I think the underlying thing is because it's a feel-good story. So because it's so unusual and so different, and, you know, if I was in a kayak or a ski or something, I'd be dead. I'd be squashed. So I was lucky that I landed on the water and then had the liquidity of the water for the whale to push me through.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a story that if there was fatality or something that's going to linger on, but because I survived, it was a story that was happy to be spread and everybody wanted a bit of it, and that was fine by me. I was happy to do it, but it doesn't give you time to process the actual event. That's something that is very different.
Yeah, there was an incident in Botany Bay a few weeks later around that time and someone didn't survive.
That was literally just before mine. So that happened the week before my incident. And that shows you that, you know, that it can go 2 ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was very lucky, and that's why it was never a money thing for me because I came out of it with my life, and my life's worth more than anything. So
I know you haven't given up wing foiling, but was there any psychological barriers going out again after the event?
Yeah, 100%. So I said no to every interview in the first 2 weeks. I said, no, I'm fine. Typical Aussie guy, you know, I'll go out in the water today, I'm fine. I even think I said it on the nightly news, I'll be out in the water tomorrow. But I wasn't, and I'm still dealing with it today. Because of the adrenaline and everything going on, you literally don't have time to sit down and process it. You're just retelling the same story over and over and over again. We had China and Japan, and they had interpreters, and I couldn't even understand the interpreters, but I'm trying to tell this story, and you're doing it at 3 a.m. in the morning, and then you've got Fox America, and they want to do a live cross, and they do that. So you really don't have time to sit down and process it. But I am left with, you know, a certain amount of fear when I go back in the water. I have been back in the water and I absolutely love what I do, but do I have reservations? Yes. Do I look at shadows under the water now, you know, whether it be reef or seaweed or whatever, and have a different view? Yes. Do I not go out as far as maybe I used to? Yes. So I definitely have reservations. And it would be natural not, you know, to have those reservations. To not have them would be unnatural.
So it's a bit like PTSD, you know, really it's an experience that's scared the crap out of you.
Yeah, and the chances of it ever happening again are like, you know, trillion to one. It doesn't matter, it still happens. So for your brain to process that thought, those thoughts, yeah, it's certainly a different thing. But, yeah, I do. About 3 weeks after the event, I went down to my home beach at Newport here, which is only about 400 metres, went down and paddled out to go wing foiling. It was a nor'easter, and I saw a breaching whale, and it was not that far out. And I freaked out straight away, paddled back in and came home. So, yeah, you are left with some scars, but that's fine, and I'll get over those eventually. But to have a few reservations is always safe anyway.
Thanks for chatting with us today. It's good to hear really personally as well how it's affected you. There has to be some sort of repercussion inside from an experience like that, you know, personal experience. I tell you what, I don't know whether I'd be brave enough to go out again after that. As you love the sport, I'm sure that your confidence will completely come back at some stage.
Yeah, look, it's fine. I love the water and I'll never be far from it. But it is a good wake-up call, and especially for guys. Guys hide their inner thoughts deep down inside, and it's if anything comes out of it, it's a nice thing to for guys to check in with mates. You know, I'm not letting the girls out of it at all, but guys think very differently. We're very much, oh, you know, nothing bothers us. But if we can get out of it that, you know, guys check in with your mates if something's, you know, out of the ordinary, or you're not sure, or you haven't seen them in a bit because they've been a bit quiet, then it is a good thing to check in with your mates and make sure they're okay. You never know what's happening, and, yeah, make sure they're in good headspace.
Thank you so much for sharing with me today. I know you've done loads of interviews and this is much after the event, but I wanted to share the story with my listeners as well. And Jason, it is amazing. Thank goodness you survived. Congratulations on being here. It's a great story and you're safe and sound.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Karen, and thanks for everyone who's listening. Cheers.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a comment. The links are in the description. And let's continue to connect through stories, because we know stories change lives. Until next time, this is Karen signing off.
Thank you for tuning in to Sharing Stories, Changing Lives. We'd like to invite you to support us by purchasing a Backstage Pass, costing about the same as 2 cups of coffee each month. With the Backstage Pass, you'll gain access to workshops and exclusive content, including videos from our live events. You can do this by visiting our website at www.thestoryroom.au. We can continue to show that sharing stories changes lives.